Welcome back, everyone, to another week here at The Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. You know who's joining me? The same guy who always joins me Fridays, almost. Brett Ehrlich, how's it going?
I am so happy to be here, John. I just fixed my white balance issue on the camera. And so it looks good. I feel good. How do you feel today, John?
I like your background lighting. It's very colorful, very holiday.
Yep.
And no fire, which would have been appropriate. But I see you want to plug your show. This isn't your show, okay? This is my show. Stop plugging your show.
It's so much easier to find that monitor image than to find the correct 10-hour fireplace loop on YouTube.
Well, there's a lot of them if you wanted. I think Netflix had a loop that you could put on for Christmas that was The Witcher fire. What's going on? Good. It's a cinematic universe at this point. Anyway, I'm glad that you're here because we have a lot to talk about, including not just day four of the speaker battle. Everyone knows we're going to talk about that, but things are actually shifting and we need to take stock of that shift. We're also going to evaluate George Santos's first week as almost a congressman. That's going to be fun. We've got a horrible racist prospective terrorists setting themselves on fire. Instant karma. I enjoy it. We're going to look back a little bit on January 6th, 2 years out. And we will, of course, have our garbage people of the week. So definitely stay tuned for that at the close of the aftermath. For now, though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Brett, are you ready to start this show?
Let's do it, John.
I thought you were going to make a reference to Pippin, but maybe
it's we'll get there. Particularly good.
The B block is particularly good. Anyway, we'll see. I like the face. You just need a pipe, and I'm sure that you own several.
I don't know where it is, but I think I put it in the garage because I was actually starting to smoke tobacco out of it.
Don't do that with a pipe. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into the news, starting with this.
And we're 3 days into this. This is the longest since the 1850s.
Well, I have the longest speech on the floor, so apparently I like to make history.
Oh, he just loves to see the bright side of things. He's making history by having lost 11 consecutive votes to be the Speaker of the House, which is a lot of them. And I have to think that could be like four with no real difference. Like they would do a vote and then they would do another vote like 20 minutes later. There was no indication that there was any reason for anyone to think that a single vote would have changed. I honestly just think they didn't have a plan and they were like, let's do another vote. But after this 3 days now, 11 different votes, it's the most protracted battle for the Speaker of the House since 1859. McCarthy did brief Republicans on a morning conference call on concessions that he had made to the different defectors. And he says that as a result of that call, he's in a good position right then. Well, here is our current knowledge of the concessions that were discussed. Take a look at this.
He lowered the threshold of the votes required to begin the process of removing himself as speaker. Just one person, one member of the conference can do it now. And to keep, he also agreed to keep his own PAC out of GOP primaries and also to add more Freedom Caucus members to the House Rules Committee. And I understand he also signed on to a separate approval process for earmarks and allowed floor votes on term limits for members and specific border policy legislation.
So yeah, like I said on the show yesterday, which concessions? All the concessions, every single one, everything he could think of. And at that point, I had a good laugh because even conceding all of those things hadn't moved a single vote. And in that interview, which was what with Representative Matt Gaetz, by the way, he made clear that there's nothing substantive McCarthy can do to get him to vote for him, supposedly. We'll see. But that said, it does appear that the concessions have had some effect. So according to three sources familiar with the deal, several holdouts were on the verge this morning of agreeing to it and will vote in favor of McCarthy. That puts us, we're past phase one of the vote, according to McCarthy. We're now in phase two, or the transition point would be the concessions. Now comes the more aggressive playing of the ball. But this is not purely hypothetical. I, like many of you, am watching the vote go on in the background. And while he did lose another vote, we've hit the dozen mark. It's happening right now. Several of the votes, I believe three, but we'll get the final result, have actually switched over. They had been voting against McCarthy. They're now voting for him. Now, 3 votes, maybe it becomes 4, maybe it becomes 5. They're cheering for someone right now, so I'm guessing another person switched over, I don't know. Represents momentum, and McCarthy thinks that will make all the difference in the world. It doesn't change to, oh, no, we're saying 9 have now flipped? Okay, so we're gonna get the specific number. He still lost, but this could represent a path forward for him. Brett, what do you think?
There's a lot to unpack there. The first part being when he, in the first video you played, brags about making history. Like, there's a lot of bad ways to make history. The guy with the smallest penis in the world has made history. I'm not sure you want to be making history and call like that your big accomplishment. I apologize for the grossness, but that's on the one hand. The other thing is, like, the main calculus here is how long is the memory of the voting electorate? With the House of Representatives, I think you can get away with a little more disarray than in, say, the Senate. But this is a fiasco, and the battle is over the narrative. I just don't see anything really momentous in what they are fighting for. Now, especially that thing to keep McCarthy's pack out of the primaries. I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter. He's still gonna find a way until you get rid of Citizens United, which is something I think that Matt Gaetz is for. He's definitely for certain campaign finance reforms. You're never gonna get the main party out of it, especially at a time, and I don't see what they gain here, especially when the main takeaway from the midterms was that the Trump wing primarying incumbents, those folks were the ones who lost them power. Yeah. So the thing he's fighting for is is their Achilles heel, and he just wants to spread it to the rest of their body.
Yeah. It is very weird, as you point out, that the ones who seem to have stopped them from having a bigger majority now get to use the smaller majority to gain more power. And even inside of that group, Lauren Boebert has been one of the most out in front, and she barely won her election in a district where Trump had done much better. So that's the weird way that politics works. But I do think we're at 9 votes right now. One individual, Andy Harris of Maryland, it looks like they're talking to potentially flip. He apparently wants to become chair of one of the subcommittees on the Appropriations Committee, which more senior members have been seeking. So at this point, would he be willing to give that to him? Maybe, if he needs that vote, and he does need that vote. But it is so weird that, like, the most fringe ones are going to be elevated to positions of even more power and authority. And I'm sure that will lead to no lingering problems for Kevin McCarthy going forward once he becomes speaker, if he does. Anyway, it looks like, yeah, Scott Perry flipped. Okay, so 9 holdouts have flipped right now, about half. That's more than they had predicted actually this morning, which I think represents good news for him. That said, we have a lot of little elements to get to. So let's jump to this next one. You know what? Let's jump directly into it. We got Laura Ingraham and a hypothetical for Matt Gaetz.
Will you be okay then if there's ultimately a deal struck with moderate Democrats that give Democrats kind of co-control of the committees? You're fine with that?
If Democrats join up to elect a moderate Republican, I will resign from the House of Representatives. That is how certain I am. I can assure your viewers that won't happen.
I mean, I'm not saying it's likely, but hey, maybe our Congress will get slightly less awful if they're able to make that deal. The Democrats, of course, have continually said that they're not making that deal, and there's no public sign that they are. I assume there were some attempts. I find that to be an incredibly unlikely outcome, even before this morning, even before there is this momentum where McCarthy has basically halved the number of holdouts. I don't think that's likely to happen. It is an interesting thing to claim, although, you know, I wouldn't trust any representative to actually hold to that were such a deal to be made, and certainly not Matt Gaetz, Brett.
I mean, none of it really matters substantively, because you still have a Senate and a House that are divided. You're still gonna have more Republicans in the House of Representatives then you have Democrats in the House of Representatives. And big picture, they're just gonna be voting stuff down and stopping stuff from happening. All this is to me is Matt Gaetz just flexing in front of America at a time when America's big message was, rather than switch parties like we're supposed to, especially in harsh economic times when gas prices are up and inflation is up, we chose to tell people to stop embarrassing us. We'd rather save face than save money, if you believe the way that the Republicans frame things. And so all Matt Gaetz is doing is taking his disgusting, like bizarro Aykroyd face and embarrassing people with it.
Yeah,
I just don't see the payoff. And sure, he can threaten to resign. Matt Gaetz is going to be fine. He's also fighting for term limits, so to speak. He just wants to be the biggest name in this category of obstructionist.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting that term limits have jumped up into this again. I know Lauren Barbett was talking about them, Matt Gaetz was talking about them. Like, it is significantly easier to say that you're in favor of term limits, and a little bit harder when you're a Matt Gaetz or a Lauren Boebert who doesn't like, I doubt they're going to become governors. I don't know, senators, like they would bump up against that. So look, if they're actually principled and do it, then that would be an interesting move. I sort of doubt it. By the way, we have a 10th flip. Chip Roy of Texas has flipped over. One of the other holdouts voted for Kevin Hern. So as of right now, McCarthy's concessions, which were expansive and are going to harm him going forward if he becomes speaker, have cut in half the opposition to him. So that's what we got right now. We're going to track this. I want to talk about one other topic though. So if we can get ready for video 5, we'll jump in, and graphic 5. We're actually going to jump to this other topic. And I want to see, how many votes are we going to have? Oh, by the way, if you're thinking we might not have this finished now, so we have to wait till Monday, that is possibly true. But he has also talked about possibly having them stay in session during the weekend, and so continuing this through Saturday and Sunday. We'll see. He hasn't guaranteed that, but he said it wasn't off the table. Anyway, with that said, let's jump to this. While the concessions Kevin McCarthy made to the holdouts are moving some of his former detractors, the endorsement from Donald Trump notably had no effect whatsoever. That doesn't mean though that Donald Trump is checked out of the process. He weighed in the dignified way you would imagine a former president would by posting on Truth Social this photo of him as the speaker, I guess. It's a flattering photo, but you get the idea. He could still become the speaker. Now, look, I get it. I get it that it's a joke. And I'm assuming that if he were actually presented the option, he wouldn't want to actually do this because that sounds like a lot of work. But I assume he doesn't actually want that. But I think the point of posting something like that is very much like, you know, when all of a sudden you become the main character on Twitter and people are really digging into a dumb thing you said or did. And then you just post that like you're out with like your friends, like you're having fun. Like, no, you're not bothered by any of that. Donald Trump is ending a week where his ability to move even the most radical MAGA people in his direction appears to have reached effectively zero. And you know that that is burning him up inside, but he's going to pretend that he's actually having fun with the process. That said, it wasn't impossible that he could become speaker because he was actually nominated. Take a look at this.
We also have to restore to the speaker's office an actual person that ought to be in the speaker's office, not the squatter who is currently there. And if the architect of the Capitol is listening, I sent a letter and I would like to know what the basis is to allow somebody to occupy the speaker's office who comes in second place 10 straight times. Is there like some basis in law or rule or precedent for that? And so I nominate President Trump because we must make our country great again, and he can start by making the House of Representatives great again.
Okay, so look, this is a stunt obviously by Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz is opposing McCarthy, who Trump supposedly supports. And so to not look bad, too bad to Trump or the continuing Trump loyalists, he's saying he actually wants Trump, who is not running, obviously. That's the way that he's supposed to win Trump back over to him. But then he undercuts it by like going on Laura Ingraham's show and declaring that Trump is wrong to back McCarthy. HR wasn't always his strong suit, which is true. Matt Gaetz isn't wrong, but I don't know that this is actually going to make Donald Trump look or feel that much better, especially because he received only one vote when he was actually officially nominated. And that came from Matt Gaetz. So what Matt Gaetz did in trying to show Trump that he still has his back was make it so that every single one of the remaining holdouts who opted not to vote for Donald Trump are just effectively spitting in Trump's face at that point. I'm not saying that's literally what they're doing, or you know, even what they're intending to do, but it's entirely possible that Trump will see it that way. So this stunt doesn't seem to have helped Matt Gaetz. It doesn't seem to have helped his relationship with Donald Trump. They continue to vote present even when given the option. It was a purely symbolic thing. It would have been easy for them to vote for Trump at that point, and they declined to, Brett.
First of all, I love all the people that vote present because they're just saying, I'm here for it. Like they're just sitting there being like, yeah,
they're
I was
literally
here.
Saying that.
Popcorn like falling out of their mouths, being like, this is great. Matt Gaetz is a weenie. And so I just don't understand. Like Trump would blow up the entire prevailing dynamic. He did that in 2016. And it was entertaining and constructive, I think, at the same time of being destructive. Because the existing framework for politicians representing the people was broken, and Trump was kind of trying to say, like, I can be a person, I can be an entertaining entity on stage and reveal how full of crap all the people I'm running against are with a simple jab or barb. But Matt Gaetz isn't really doing any of that. All Matt Gaetz is, he's trying to be the guy that stands up against like the establishment and Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy sounds and looks like a traditional Republican politician. You could put him in like any photo from the last, you know, 50 years and he would fit in, right? But I just think that Matt Gaetz is doing such weird stuff in the meantime and not pointing to any big initiatives he's fighting for that people actually care about. All he's doing is proving that his party is weak and disorganized. And Kevin, and he's weakening the position of the speaker that represents his party. I just don't see the utility in it for anyone other, but not including Matt Gaetz. I don't see what he gets out of this other than screen time, which is like, just like that, their instinct. It's like the instinct to just eat, like he's hungry for it.
Well, he does want the screen time. You could say there's utility in the concessions that they got, which to the extent that, and some of the concessions don't seem particularly substantive, but in theory, if they're one of the people who gets to be on the rules committee now that wasn't going to, that's potentially significant. Going forward, I want to turn now to, because we just hit, I think, the 12th person who flipped. So it's definitely looking like the tide might have turned. So let's jump into this last video of Jeanine Pirro and then talk about where we go forward from this point.
I'm angry about it. You know why? They're making the Republicans look ridiculous. Lauren Boebert, you know, with all due respect, I mean, the woman barely won her race. You're holding out until Kevin falls. What is the alternative? What do you want? What is the option? What can people agree on? You want the Republicans to vote to get the Democrats to get a Speaker of the House? Can you imagine Nancy Pelosi saying, let me get some Republicans so that I can be the Speaker? They're egomaniacs who've got no answers. And they ought to just be quiet and just go along with the majority at this point. If you don't want to vote for a bill, don't vote for it. And that's the end of it.
Okay, so Jeanine Pirro is not having the holdouts, and especially Lauren Boebert, who, I mean, Jeanine Pirro is not wrong. Like she won her election by a couple hundred votes. She should really be focusing on how she's going to survive the next challenge, where theoretically the Democrats will actually put some money into it. But anyway, whether they were purely egomaniacal, whether they were making the Republican Party look bad, I think that we've had some interesting conversations about that. Now the conversation is going to be a little bit different, because at one point you had 21 who didn't vote for McCarthy. That's now down to just half that. And so I think the pressure is going to be even stronger on the remaining ones. They're saying that they're going to hold strong, Brett, but if it was considered to be an irrational position to hold to try to stop Kevin McCarthy before, now with so many of them going over seemingly directly in response to the concessions that have been made, I think that the attacks against them are going to really amp up. And we do have to bear in mind, I talked about this with Farron Cousins on the show yesterday, there are some pretty significant weapons that could be wielded against these holdouts in terms of money, in terms of endorsements, in terms of finding primary challengers. Kevin McCarthy yesterday said that he was not going to be removing people who voted against him from committees, but in theory, he could do some sorts of threats. So what do you think about how, like, basically the rhetorical part of this war might change now, or if you think at all, now that so many of the holdouts have flipped?
I think that so the calculus is, Matt Gaetz wants to he already established that he wants to represent whatever this movement is. Whatever it is, he wants to represent it. And if he is the last holdout and the never McCarthyer, then he solidifies his position in the eyes of everyone as the person who was like, that was never good enough. I mean, if it is the case that the Republicans are always the obstructionists ever since Mitch McConnell said he wanted to grind Obama to a halt, then to vote against your own party makes you the most obstructionist of the obstructionists. The confusing thing to me is there's no, I don't think there's enough people who care about what Matt Gaetz is fighting for in this position. The point of this wing was to move the so-called crazies or the radicals or the purest MAGA people. But the most MAGA, the OG MAGA, is Trump. And he's like, this is stupid. I don't even know why you're trying to do it. So he's cutting a small group of people into, what is it now, like 18ths, like into very small, tiny bits. He's going to rule the act, like him and Lauren Boebert are going to be in charge of two votes, which at this point no longer is big enough to stop any movement, which is what we just proved. So he took his swing here. Yeah. I just don't see what it gets him.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see. It was, I think, easier to hold this position when you had close to 24 people with you. If it gets down to 5 or 6, or even, you know, just the 5, I think that becomes a little bit more difficult. And this is not a direct 1-to-1, but remember, like, when they had an issue with Madison Cawthorn, they were able to hurt Madison Cawthorn. Like, he pretty much disappeared from the party pretty fast. And Trump, so it's the more, as you said, McCarthy could stand in for an establishment Republican from before, but also Trump is on his side. And it's not even like they don't have some of the crazies. Marjorie Greene is on that side. So if they wanted to ice out like a Matt Gaetz and a Lauren Boebert, like, they do have a couple of the wings of the party seemingly in agreement to do that. That doesn't mean they can force them to vote for Kevin McCarthy, but they can start to deploy some pretty vicious weapons. What I'm going to be curious to see going forward isn't just, does he become speaker? And it looks like the odds have gone up because of those concessions, even though it weirdly took a day, like there was a lag for the concessions to matter. But it's that, what effect will this have on the ability of those 5 to 12 or whatever to do this same thing repeatedly through the next 2 years? When the debt ceiling battle comes up, when government funding comes up, some bill that, you know, Kevin McCarthy does want to get passed, can they just do this again? And I think the way that they're treated in the next couple of days is really going to determine that. But what do you think?
I don't know. I have to think more about the debt ceiling issue, because it'll be, I don't know whose budget it'll end up really affecting. But I mean, that's going to get really, really dicey. And everybody is just, you know, right now there's been the last measurable thing before this was the midterm elections. And now everybody is forced to figure out what, read those tea leaves and find out what they learned. And there's so many different levels of what people think they learned. And there's other people who don't care about what the country learned. They only care about themselves getting more PR, especially Matt Gaetz in a discussion about campaign finance, because the more his face gets out there, the more he can show to his constituents and to the remaining crazies what is, he can drive small dollar donations in his calculation in that. He has to, otherwise he's just committing suicide politically. Yeah. So that has to be the calculation, that he can keep raising money no matter what the outsiders do. And then in the meantime, try to limit the outsiders' ability to intervene, the outsiders being the establishment. But Lauren Boebert, I just think, is dumb. She doesn't know how to read those tea leaves. She's trying to eat them.
So it's like a matcha situation. Yeah, she has not come off, I think, particularly well during this. Her ability to articulate her position outside of a couple of repetitive talking points has been pretty limited at this point. But here is the last point we're going to make about this. Apparently, it is now up to 14 flips. Victoria Spartz isn't really a flip. She was a present voter a couple times, but she said she was always going to support McCarthy. But, and here's maybe the single most interesting part of this, Paul Gosar just voted for McCarthy. He was like, part of the I'm not going to vote for McCarthy wing, and he just did. And he's legitimately a crazy person, and they were able to flip him.
It's what's so crazy is that there's the hall passes you get in Congress where the speaker is supposed to be like, all right, it's okay for you to be publicly opposed to this because we don't need you to pass it and it's going to pass. And there's a lot of people who are like, I want to have been on this ride, but I don't want to be the last person on the ride. Like, yeah. I'm off. Now everybody knows that I fought for these five concessions. I got what I want. I beat Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
And I changed the conversation a little bit. But not everyone wants to be the last one on that. They want to declare a victory as opposed to prove their impudence for no rational reason.
Yeah. 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 And he can end up having a deal that allows four of them. Like Matt Gaetz could end up voting no, even though maybe he knows that this thing is done. Maybe he even helps to persuade some of the others to flip over in exchange for something. And part of that deal could be I get to be one of the last four that was against you. In the same way that when the fiscal cliff happened, Kevin McCarthy was whipping votes to pass it, and then he got to be one of the ones that voted against it. He was literally whipping votes for it. It's all so fake. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that these people don't trust him.
But it's anyway, so, but like the job of the whip fast, and the job of a good, the job of the whip and the job of a good House Speaker is someone who can count votes and know exactly how many they have. And he's proven he has no ability to whip and or count. Yeah. Which is not weird for Republicans who declare victories in elections they lost.
That's true. I'm sure that that will not have any consequences for him going forward. You want to know how George Santos's first week as a kind of congressman is going? It pretty much I'd expect. He not only doesn't have the respect of his colleagues, except one in which getting their respect is probably worse than not having it. He doesn't have an office or staff in his district. He might get it. Once someone reminds him that that's a thing a congressperson is supposed to have. But Fox 5 New York reported on Wednesday that the Republicans' Douglaston Queens office was listed at the same location where retiring Representative Thomas Suozzi opened his doors, which seems a little weird. Maybe that's typical, I don't know. But video shows that the door remains closed. Nearby employees said there have been no action there over the past few weeks. So it's a busy week. Okay, I get that. Although you're supposed to have staff in DC and staff back in your district. But he hasn't had anything leading up to this. You actually have a job you're supposed to do. It's not just the voting in DC. It's not just going on Fox News. You're supposed to be aiding your constituents in the district. And one would think if you're coming into office having brutally lost the trust and faith of even the people who voted for you, you'd at least want to demonstrate that you're ready to do the job to maybe reel a few of them back in. But so far, no. No. Representative Peter King said, any other member of Congress, when first elected, you have your staff in the office on the day Congress opens. People are going to be calling. You want to make sure the phones are working. Fox News Digital, by the way, attempted to call the number listed for Santos, but the voicemail box was full. Additional text messages and voicemails to Santos and his staff also went unanswered. So yeah, it looks like people are trying to reach out to him, Brett, but he's not doing the job. He's just kind of yawning his way through votes for speaker.
Or not knowing that his name was called, implying maybe he does not know his own name. I will say this, I applaud Santos for being kind of absent. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt spent hundreds of days of his presidency just out in national parks, uncontactable, roaming around. And he was one of the great presidents in the history of our land and a proud Republican until he changed parties because Bull Moose or something. But I absolutely love this story because the guy on a normal, like there's tons of people who get elected to Congress who don't really know what all goes into it. They have a whole extensive orientation process. I am not certain that A, he's paying attention, B, he's there, or C, that anyone's that invested in helping this guy succeed after he has become the single biggest embarrassment in Congress, which is a difficult feat to achieve in a Congress with the likes of Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. And considering that he could be the most embarrassing one. If he is going to climb back up the social or respectability ladder, he's going to have to start with those lowest rungs. And we have to give him credit. He appears to be doing an okay job so far. Take a look at this.
Buck. Bouchon.
McCarthy.
Baczynski. Jeffries.
They're chitting and chatting. And if we could jump to graphic 8, apparently they're having a good time. Marjorie Greene, who's notable as quite a comedian, made him like bust out laughing at some point, if we go to this last graphic. So most reputable members of either party want nothing to do with him, but I guess, you know, birds of a feather or something. What do you think about his new, I think they should do some sort of like buddy government film.
There's a very hilarious photo also of AOC talking to him. And the look on her face is just like, what? It is insane. Let me see if I can find it, but it is so good. I love it very much.
What I am worried about, earlier this week, I forget what day, my request was just that we please try, and this has never happened before, but let's please try to not let the gradual passage of time give him fake respectability. Like,
you mean,
we cannot allow him to just become a regular congressman at some point. And I'm worried that I'm going to gradually do that and just start talking about him as if he's a regular person. But I hope nobody does that. Like, you cannot escape the sorts of lies that he told about 9/11 and the Holocaust and all of that. Let him be an outcast who can only talk to Marjorie Greene. I just hope. It's, oh my God, what is?
If you go to my single, you can see AOC looking at him like, what's going on? This is an Anna Moneymaker Getty Images photo that we have the rights to.
Nice. I wish I knew what he said and what she said back.
These are the great moments. Just look at just the amazing things that are happening in this photo.
Oh my God.
What? And then down
How is
here.
All of this happening in one photo. He just realized that he was being. Oh my God. Anyway, so okay. That's all the time we have for the ridiculous stuff going on in the House. We're going to keep an eye for when the next vote is called and all of that. But for now, why don't we move to our next block? A little bit of good news starting with this.
We were so excited to get this decision today. And as you can see, it's rather hefty. So there will be a lot for us to learn as we go along. But this was a definitive decision. There is no question that abortion is legal and protected in South Carolina. And we look forward to continuing that service, that abortion care to our patients.
That is the Director of Public Affairs for South Carolina reacting to the decision of the state Supreme Court knocking down the 6-week ban on abortion. It was a 3-2 decision, so pretty close. These things tend to be. Never forget how important the judiciary is. But it took about 2 years for this decision to finally come, a long battle. That was Republican Governor Henry McMaster, who 2 years ago signed the 6-week abortion restriction into law. It's banning abortions after cardiac activity is detected. That was one of the tricks that the anti-abortion movement played, trying to pretend that for some reason that threshold had biological or ethical, like, significance for some reason. So, you know, we can go from 20 to 6 specifically because of that point. In any event, there were actually exceptions in this ban, which makes it notable in more recent days. It provided exceptions for pregnancies by rape or incest, pregnancies that endanger the patient's life. Some of the more recent bans don't even include those things. So it's particularly significant that this was knocked down considering that it had those exceptions. That seems like almost a more significant thing for the state Supreme Court to do. And I want to give you just a little bit of the reasoning. So Kay Hearn is one of the justices of that Supreme Court, said that the state unquestionably has the authority to limit the right of privacy that protects from state interference with the decision to get an abortion. But she added that any limitation must afford sufficient time to determine one is pregnant and take reasonable steps if she chooses to terminate that pregnancy. 6 weeks is quite simply not a reasonable period of time for these two things to occur. And I'm sure that this will be appealed. We'll see what ends up happening with that. But because this has been struck down, South Carolina now reverts their previous abortion law, which restricts the process after 20 weeks. Brett, what do you think?
I mean, it's very significant that this happened in South Carolina, a deep red state that since 1964 has voted for Republicans, except for Jimmy Carter versus Gerald Ford. Like that was the only time that nationally in the presidential election they opted for a Democrat. And you know, those are relevant. And the only thing really relevant is anything after Roe versus Wade in this context. But I mean, that is there. This is one time when a Republican-packed court is not out of step with the people at large.
Yeah.
And time and time again, whether it's in South Carolina's court or if it's in Kansas's public referendum, the people are saying, actually, we are for a woman's right to choose, period. We are pro-choice. If you want to do what you want with your body, we're fine with that. And and we'll see what happens. Does this then go back to the Supreme Court of the United States of America?
And if it's appealed.
If it's appealed, it will then, you know, further enshrine how out of step with America and sanity the Supreme Court is as a result of the Heritage Foundation just jumping in and kind of putting together a great ground game to get psychopathic Supreme Court justices legitimized.
Yeah. One thing that is definitely worth looking into if this does get appealed is that South Carolina's state constitution does have an explicit right to privacy. That right to privacy, which basically was founded on Roe v. Wade, was significantly damaged, if not destroyed, earlier this year. So we will see if the national Supreme Court is willing to override what is clearly a part of the state constitution. That'll certainly be interesting. And really fast, here's an updated map from the New York Times of where full or 6 week bans on abortion have happened. So you can see a significant amount of the country has gone to full on bans just since last year. But don't worry, they're recalibrating on abortion. Don't think of them as radicals. Don't get mad at the Republicans. They've only banned it in a whole bunch of states, as we knew they would. With that said, we are going to take a short break. We come back, we're going to be talking about the state of freedom in the state of Florida after this. By the way, could we get a poll, actually, if any of the mods can set up a poll? I'd like to see what people's gut is about whether, does he become speaker today or does he not? I think that's enough for right now, and we'll see. And with that said, why don't we jump into more news? Following last year's Florida passage of the Don't Say Gay bill, more and more school systems are banning more and more books deep in the heart of Freedomville. One Florida school system, Lake County, which includes about 60 public schools, has banned And Tango Makes Three. It's an award-winning children's book based on the true story of two gay male Central Park Zoo penguins who adopt an egg and raise the baby penguin as their own. You can see a copy of the cover of the book right there. It's, first of all, it is literally based on a true story. And second of all, it's about two animals helping out another animal. That's the whole thing. And so obviously kids need to be barred from reading it. It was published way back in 2005. It has been consistently challenged for years. Challenges have included complaints that the story is unsuitable for young children and has homosexual overtones. Others have said the book is based on one of those subjects that is best discovered by students in another time or in another place. So vague. Some parents have also requested the book be placed in a section for alternative or non-traditional families. I'm not saying that like you couldn't have, why do you have to have a section like that? Why is that a thing? That's the compromise of these people. Anyway, Ron DeSantis says, when you actually look at the bill and it says no sexual instruction to kids pre-K through three, how many parents want their kids to have transgenderism or something injected in a classroom instruction? It's basically saying for our younger students, do you really want them being taught about sex? And this is any sexual stuff. I will remind you, this is about two zoo animals raising another zoo animal. It's not about them having sex with each other or with the new animal. It's not sexual. It's about two animals helping another animal. What has happened to our country, Brett?
I'm just saying that when Roy and Silo in 1998 at the Central Park Zoo were given a hatched baby or a fertilized egg to hatch, that baby Tango, a female penguin, ended up partnering with a female penguin named Tanuzi. So those two penguins were groomers. And gay is contagious, according to the scientific study that I have just performed at sites.tufts.edu/museumsstudents.
I am worried that if they discover that, then they will be even more emboldened in their opposition to kids reading a book about animals.
But that's also what's so funny. It's like, listen, don't read the book. It's just gonna be in libraries. You don't have to read it. I love the arguments that are all like, you have to ban the Bible because in the Bible, Lot's kids try to bang him. So what? You know, there's a lot of abortion in the Bible when God floods the earth.
Yeah.
That is the same logic they're applying to this. This is about two penguins being like, let's raise a baby. This is a family unit. This is a functional family unit instead of a dysfunctional family unit where there aren't any parents and the child just dies. This proves that they don't care about it. It's a story about overcoming obstacles that they are bringing a lot more. And this is the main point. They end up bringing so much more attention to these books than if they didn't say anything about them at all. No one would find this book. No one would read this book. And they've got to know that. So their political calculus is that they want this attention. They want to be seen. And it's not for the children. It's for clout. And they want clout because it translates to votes. But the truth is, has it really translated to votes? No, these kinds of activities go against just basic political trends. They should have won more seats in the midterms. They won fewer seats. So let's look at everything they're doing. This kind of stuff is embarrassing. Most of America just wants like a job and something they can, and a family or friends and just some kind of base level meaning in their life, not to fight these ridiculous unhinged crusades against seemingly gay fictionalized novelization of penguin stories.
Yeah, that if they teach a lesson, it teaches to be in a committed relationship, start a family, and that adoption is good. I don't understand. I despise the people who, as you point out, like Ron DeSantis, I don't think is losing sleep over and Tango makes three. He's just weaponizing it for his own political ambitions, which is probably more reprehensible. The actual activists who have spent the last 17 years trying to get this book banned, I'm sure some of them also are doing it for clout. You can be a non-elected person and still do literally everything you do, no matter how devastating, for clout. Look at libs of TikTok. But there are some people who they've spent decades, a significant chunk of their entire life, the energy and passion and organizing that they're capable of to stop kids reading about penguins adopting another penguin. It's just madness to me. Like you could pick at random another cause to champion and you would do more good for yourself and for the world. Anyway, with that said, as of right now, the poll is today the day we get a new speaker. Yes is at 21%, no is at 79%. So people aren't yet won over just yet, but we'll see. We'll have more votes. I'm putting no on there. We'll have more votes, they'll have more votes, and we'll see what happens. You look like you had a really fast final point.
Yeah, I mean, they had the option to write life, liberty, and the pursuit of property in our founding documents, and they went with pursuit of happiness. And I think that is the trump card in it all. Like, if you want to be in a gay relationship because it makes you happy, you should be able to. That is protected in the, you know, literature of America.
Yeah, I would love to see someone actually try to explain what is wrong about what the penguins are doing. Like, literally the problem you have with the lifestyle of the penguins. They're absolutely broken people. Okay, with that said, we've got other awful people to get to. So with that, why don't we jump into this video? Thank you to Chuds of TikTok for sharing that video. Absolutely insane. That is two individuals pouring an accelerant and setting on fire, trying to burn down an immigration services building in California. And they, to some extent, succeeded, but of course, also set themselves on fire. It's almost perfect karmically. Anyway, you know what the crime of this building and its employees was? It was so terrible that this act of domestic terrorism needed to be done. They help customers work with the immigration process and pay their income taxes. They're helping people who have immigrated be like contributing members of society and make sure that all of their legal paperwork is in order. Anyway, because they were on fire and desperately trying to not die, the suspects dropped their phones. Those are now in the hands of authorities. And so the chance of them being tracked down seems higher than zero. The fire was contained in the business's garage, but smoke from the fire did get inside the building. Most of the damage was limited, but a large industrial fan was destroyed. And one of the police officers involved in this says the footage is quite dramatic, and we hope that these individuals are identified quickly. I certainly hope so, because I'm imagining that the sort of person that would start a fire like this maybe is gonna be a little bit more careful next time to not be close to it, but I have a feeling this is probably not the last crime they commit. What do you think, Brett?
Instant karma's gonna get you. Wow, bad, dumb, stupid criminals that, I mean, when you see a video like this, you look at it and you go like, why am I seeing this right now? Cause I know what subreddit I'm on, and it's not typically like this is hard news where it's just gonna make you sad. It's like a weird, nihilistic, cynical, insane news station or news subreddit. And so I was like, I'm pretty sure the way these guys are flinging flammable liquids all over themselves, they're gonna catch themselves on fire, and they did. They got what's coming to them. And I think it'll be easy to identify them because they will be like mummified in bandages.
Yeah, with the phone and the horrific burns, I mean, do you think they went to the hospital instantly to be treated? Because that seems like that could be tracked then. Yeah. In any event, like I said, there was some damage on this building, which you need these sorts of services to be provided. So there is actually a GoFundMe that has been set up. The title for it is "Our Business Was Burned on January 2nd." And as of at least when we screen cap this, some money had been raised. I don't know if that's enough to repair all of the damage or maybe to get security for the future, but I don't know. Like I like the instant turnaround of what they're trying to do, but the idea that you would just have people that take this one little building, one of thousands of buildings, to do this sort of thing and think, I need to literally burn this down. Do they know for sure that nobody's in it? What are they capable of? If they're willing to do that, Brett, if they're willing to burn down a building, what else are they potentially capable of if they're not tracked down?
And specific, you know, this is implied in what you said, but like they, to pay your income taxes, that's what it's for. It's to basically remedy one of the largest complaints the right wing has against immigrants, which is they take. This is a way for them to give. We're ensuring they can pay the taxes that you complain they're stealing from you.
Yeah. I'm checking up just to see if, it looks like they've raised a little bit more than 9,000 now. They'd been asking for 5,000. So I'm assuming that they're probably going to be okay. But I would definitely, if I were the police, I would have a bit more of an eye on this building. And definitely, if anyone has any information or whatever that can track these people down, that would be great too. Okay, with that said, we have like 1 minute to go until the end of our hour. I'm gonna read just a comment or two. Willow Wisp sent in a super chat saying this congressional impasse is part of the insurrection. If this 20 gets deal, another 20 won't on purpose. Attempted democratic coup de grace. It's about fascism, not Trump. Yeah, I don't know if they see it ideologically as the exact same thing. It is, I think it's part of the same sort of chain of events, the consequences of the way that people like Kevin McCarthy and all have pushed for more people to be elected who hold this sort of like the government needs to be stopped at all costs ideology. It's like with the fire though, that he threw the accelerant on the Republican Party and then is shocked that he's ablaze. Anyway, that's all the time we have for our first hour. Lots more to come in the aftermath, including the throwing away of our garbage people of the week. So don't go anywhere. Brett and I will be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.